improve on your social skills. You're not exactly a fun guy. Anyone ever tell you that?
Ranger cut his eyes to me and then back to Rufus.
The barter system is where you trade some shit for some other shit, Rufus said. Wait a minute. Maybe I don't mean the barter system. What is it when you say you're paying for legal advice, but you're really paying for inventory?
Lying, Ranger said.
Yeah, that's what those assholes understand. Lying.
Ranger reached forward and took the bottle of champagne off the coffee table and refilled Kane's glass.
Anything else you want to tell me?
What's your angle?
No angle, Ranger said. Like I told you, I'm looking to retain counsel, and I like the firm. I'm just having a hard time finding someone to talk to. No one's answering the phone.
Do you have something to barter?
You want to stay away from Jimmy Monster. He's wearing a wire.
Ow.
And? Ranger said.
I'm meeting Victor Gorvich tonight. He has a package for me. We used to make the drop at a warehouse, but the warehouse burned down, so I'm seeing him at 10 at Domino's.
The strip club on 3rd Street?
That's a one. Just make sure my business is concluded before you move in.
Ranger stood.
Be careful, he said to Rufus.
Fuck that, Rufus said.
We were a couple blocks away from the apartment building and my cell phone rang.
I can't talk long, Morelli said. I just wanted to pass some information on to you. The guy in the warehouse was identified by his wedding band and key ring. It was Peter Smullen.
Holy crap. The guy in the warehouse was Peter Smullen, I said to Ranger.
Who are you talking to? Morelli asked.
Ranger.
You're with Ranger?
You told him to take care of me.
Yeah, but I didn't mean...
I'm getting static, I said to Morelli. Hello? Hello? And I disconnected. He needed a moment to collect himself, I said to Ranger.
Understandable.
Let's recap, I said to Ranger. First, the law firm's accountant goes swimming with the fishes. Then Dickie gets dragged out of his house. And now Peter Smullen is dead. My cell phone rang again.
We got cut off, Morelli said.
Cell phones, I said. Go figure.
I wanted to tell you Marty Goble might want to talk to you again. Smullen's secretary said Smullen was supposed to meet with you the night he disappeared.
Are you suggesting I might be under suspicion for Smullen's murder?
You have an alibi, right?
I hung up and slouched in my seat. Smullen's secretary told the police I was supposed to meet with Smullen the night he disappeared. Ranger hooked a U-turn on Broad.
Let's see what Smullen's girlfriend has to say about all this.
We passed Joyce, who was now going in the wrong direction in her rented white Taurus.
I used to be such a badass, Ranger said. Everyone was afraid of me. Everyone wanted to kill me. I needed Tank walking behind me to keep the paid assassins under control. And now look at me. I'm followed by a woman in a rented Taurus.
He made a vague gesture with his hand.
And I can't remember the last time someone tried to kill me.
It wasn't that long ago, I said. It was in my apartment and you got shot a bunch of times and it wasn't all that much fun.
Not to change the subject, but if I understood the conversation back there, Victor Gorvich is supplying Rufus with drugs.
Ranger turned off Broad and drove toward the projects.
Not only is he supplying drugs, he's laundering the money through the firm. He's billing Rufus for legal advice when Rufus is actually paying him for inventory. If you look at the client list you lifted, it's a shopping cart filled with the world's most wanted. Not just drug dealers, but gunrunners and agents for dictators. One or more of the partners is shuffling guns and drugs around and washing the money as billable hours.
Gorvich for sure.
Ranger parked curbside at the law firm's slum apartment building, and we both got out.
Ranger took a remote gizmo, aimed it at the Porsche, and the Porsche chirped. What's that? I asked.
Putting the shields up on the Batmobile, Ranger said.
We hoofed it up to the top floor and rang the bell. No answer. We rang it again, and Uncle Mickey stuck his head out his door.
She isn't there, Uncle Mickey said. She went shopping.
He looked at Ranger and retreated back into his apartment. Ranger took his little tool out of a pocket on his cargo pants and opened the apartment door. Smullen's apartment had been freshly painted and carpeted. The furniture was new. The kitchen appliances were new. The countertop was Korean. The building was a slum, but Smullen's apartment was not. Smullen's toilet worked. Smullen's clothes were hanging in the closet and neatly folded in bureau drawers. His toiletries were still in the bathroom. I checked pants' pockets for the bug, but didn't find it. I walked out of the bedroom and caught Ranger at the living room window, looking down. He was standing hands on hips watching two men direct a flatbed tow truck up to the Porsche. His car alarm was wailing away, and the men were ignoring it. Ranger unlocked and raised the window, unholstered his gun, took aim, and shot one of the men in the leg. The guy crumpled onto the pavement and rolled around, holding his leg. The flatbed driver jumped out and helped drag the wounded guy into the truck, and they all drove away. Ranger aimed his gizmo at the car and silenced the alarm. "Do you feel better now?" I asked. "You got to shoot someone today."
"I've still got the touch," Ranger said.
"Smolin's clothes are here, but I didn't find the bug. Did you come up with anything interesting?"
"No. He doesn't have a home office. Not even a laptop squirreled away somewhere."
The lock tumbled on the front door, and Smolin's girlfriend pushed into the apartment. She had a brown grocery bag in the crook of her arm, and she was out of breath from the stairs.
"What the fuck is this?" she said to Ranger and me.
"We came to visit, but you weren't home," I said to her. She cut her eyes to Ranger.
"Who's the hot guy? Is he a cop?"
"No, he's Ranger."
"Why is he dressed like a cop? What is this, Halloween and no one told me?"
I glanced back at Ranger. "You aren't going to shoot her, are you?"
"Thinking about it."
"Was Peter involved in anything shady at work?" I asked her.
"Sure, he was a lawyer."
"I mean really shady, like illegal, trafficking in drugs, for instance?" She set the bag on the kitchen counter.
"I don't think so. Why would he do something like that? He was making a fortune just being a lawyer."
"Did he have another office somewhere? I noticed he doesn't have a home office here."
"He works at the law office. What's the deal anyway? I'm calling the cops. You jerk-offs broke into my apartment." "Hey, wait a minute. You aren't going to kidnap me, are you? Oh my God, you've got Peter, right? That's why he hasn't come home. You've got Peter. Help!" she yelled. "Help, police!"
"Go ahead," I said to Ranger. "Shoot her."
"We aren't going to kidnap you," Ranger said. "And we didn't kidnap Peter Smullen. In fact, we have some very bad news for you."
"Help!"
she yelled.
"Help, help!"
Ranger looked at me.
"You have any ideas besides shoot her?"
"I love your boots," I said to her. "Vuitton, right?" She looked down at the boots. Knee-high, black leather, stacked heel.
"Yeah,"
she said.
"They cost a fortune, but I had to have them. I got a bag to match. You want to see the bag?"
"Sure." She went into the bedroom and came back with the bag.
"This is the shit, right?" she said.
"It looks great on you. You can carry a big bag like that," I told her. "It's a to-die-for bag. And speaking of dying, Peter Smolin is dead."
"What do you mean he's dead?"
"He was caught in a fire in a warehouse last night, and he died." "I'm so sorry," I told her.
"How do you know?"
"It was made public this morning." She was deer in the headlights for a moment.
"Are you sure?"
"He was identified by his wedding band and his key ring."
"Son of a bitch. All that money, and I was so close to getting my hands on it. And the jackass has to get himself toasted in a fucking warehouse. Life is so friggin' unfair."
Her eyes darted around the room.
"This apartment belongs to the law firm," she said. "I need a truck. Do you have a truck?"
"No."
"We'll have to rent one."
Actually, we have to be moving along," I said. "Like to stay, but..." Ranger was at the door. "Uncle Mickey lives across the hall," I told her. "He can get you a truck." I followed Ranger down the stairs and out of the building. I was about to get into the Porsche when I spotted Joyce half a block away.
"Be right back," I said to Ranger.
I jogged down to Joyce and leaned in the window at her. "Peter Smolin is dead," I said. "He was killed in a warehouse fire last night. His girlfriend lives in that building we just left. She's on the top floor. We couldn't get any information out of her, but you might want to try."
"Are you shitting me?"
"No, swear to God." I jogged back to Ranger and slid onto the passenger seat. "I think I got rid of Joyce for a while."
Chapter 12.
Ranger and I were in his den watching a basketball game.
"How's your leg?"
he asked. "It's a little sore."
"I need to leave for Domino's. Do you want to come with me or would you rather stay here?"
"I'll go with you." He looked at my V-neck sweater with the Range Man logo embroidered in purple.
"Do you have something to wear that doesn't say Range Man?"
"No. Even my underwear has your name on it."
"It's Ella. She got a machine that stitches the logo and she can't control herself. She puts it on everything."
He stood.
"I'm gonna change. I'll be ready to go in a minute."
I'd been to Domino's once before. Lula and I made an apprehension there last spring. It was a typical titty bar with a raised stage and pole dancers. I was told it had a back room for lap dances, but Lula and I didn't get back there. Our man was at the bar, stuffing money into G-strings. Ranger had changed into black jeans and a long-sleeved collared black shirt that he wore out to hide his gun. "Do you have money for the girls?" I asked him.
"I try not to hand money out at strip bars. It's like feeding stray cats. Once you feed them, they never go away."
"Yes, but I'll be there to protect you this time." Ranger held my jacket for me.
"I usually rely on Tank, but tonight the job is yours."
We took the elevator to the garage, and Ranger chose a black Explorer over one of his private cars, easier to blend. Domino's was just 10 minutes away from Range Man. For that matter, everything was 10 minutes from Range Man. Ranger had placed his security company in a good location. If an alarm went off anywhere in Trenton, Range Man was there in 10 minutes or less. On weekends, Domino's rocked. It was filled to capacity with bachelor parties and couples out for fun. On a Monday night, it was half empty, and there was no problem getting a table. Ranger steered us to a dark corner where he could put his back to the wall. Most of the men were at the bar that surrounded the dance platform, a bunch of sad regulars and some out-of-town businessmen who straggled in from the hotels on Route 1. I was the only woman. The music was loud. Disco. The two women on stage were in 4-inch stilettos and dental floss. They looked like they wouldn't mind getting out of the shoes. A waitress stopped by, all smiley face.
"Hey, handsome," she said to Ranger. "What'll it be?"
"Vodka rocks," Ranger said. "Two of them."
I raised an eyebrow at him when the waitress left. "You drink vodka rocks?"
"Less to dump on the floor," he said.
We didn't want to make an entrance and have Gorvitch spot us, so we'd arrived early. The disadvantage to this soon became apparent. Ranger was a bimbo magnet. The dancers finished their set, and one immediately strolled over to our table and straddled Ranger.
"Want a private party?" she asked.
"Not tonight," Ranger said.
He handed her a 20, and she left.
"What about the cat-feeding theory?" I asked him.
"Out the window."
Our drinks were delivered, and a new dancer popped up in front of Ranger.
"Hey, sweetie," she said. "How's it going?"
And before Ranger had a chance to answer, she had her huge breasts in his face and her leg over his lap.
"Not tonight," Ranger said.
He handed her a 20, and she left.
"I'm seeing a pattern here," I said to Ranger. "How often do you come here?"
"Too often. I thought you were going to run interference."
"It's like they come out of nowhere. Before I know it, they're on top of you."
A woman in rhinestone pasties and a rhinestone G-string stopped by, and Ranger handed her a 20 before she got her leg over him.
"You could go through a lot of money fast this way," I said to Ranger.
"All for you, babe. Small price to pay to keep you out of jail."
He dumped his vodka on the floor behind him. The waitress swooped in, took his glass, and gave him a fresh vodka. Rufus rolled in at 9:55. He took a seat at a table by the bar and ordered a drink. One of the girls approached him and was allowed to do her thing. Guess the room in the back was closed on Monday, and the action came out front. Ranger and I watched her gyrate and bounce and rub against Rufus.
"I know men like this sort of thing," I said to Ranger, "but personally, I prefer a shoe sale at Macy's. On the plus side, we'll be in good shape if we have to follow him. She's shedding so much body glitter, he's gonna glow in the dark."
The dancer slithered up Rufus, and his entire face got smooshed into her breasts.
"She's gonna kill him," I said to Ranger. "He's gonna suffocate. Do something."
"He's okay. His color still looks good," Ranger said.
"His color is terrible. He's purple."
"It's the lights."
"Do men have, you know, reactions to this rubbing and writhing stuff in public?" I asked Ranger.
"I guess, but this is the first time I've seen someone turn purple."
At 10:50, the big blonde muscle guy with the stapled nuts came into the bar and sat across from Rufus. He said something to the dancer, and she abruptly got up and left. Rufus called for the check and finished his drink. He paid his bill and left with the muscle guy.
"Give them time to get out of the building," Ranger said. "We don't want to ruin this by getting recognized."
"Aren't you afraid of losing them?"
"Tank is in the lot and Hal is on the street."
Ranger took a call from Tank.
"They're moving," Ranger said, snapping his phone closed.
He signaled the waitress and dropped $100 on the table. We left the club and followed Tank's directions through town. We turned into the projects, and I guessed where we were headed, the law firm's apartment building. There was only on-street parking on Jewel Street, and at this time of the night, every parking place was taken.
Rufus went in the car with the muscle,
Tank said over speakerphone.
He got dropped off in front of the building and the muscle kept driving. Hal followed the car to Stark Street and lost it in traffic. I'm double parked across the street from the building. Rufus went in and hasn't come out. No one else has gone in since I've been here. Only a few minutes.
Ranger called Hal. Look at the back of the building and make sure it's secure.
Yes, sir, Hal said. I'm a couple blocks away. I'll get right to it.
Ranger circled the block and found a parking place on a side street. We left the car and walked to where Tank was idling. We stood on the sidewalk and looked up at the building. Lights were on in units 1A and 3A. Curtains were drawn in 3A. It has to be the third floor, I said. I was in every apartment, and I can't see any of the others as a possibility.
I told Rufus I'd wait for him to clear before I made a move, but this feels off, Ranger said.
What do you want to do with Gorevich when you find him? I asked.
I want to talk to him.
A car careened onto Jewel half a block away and screamed past us, going in the opposite direction. Two men in the car, the passenger in shadow. The driver was the blonde muscle guy. Hal was half a block behind with his foot to the floor. Tank jerked away from the curb, hooked a U-turn, and Tank and Hal disappeared down the street in pursuit. Ranger and I ran to the building and took the stairs two at a time to the third floor. I smelled the gasoline before we even reached the top of the stairs. It was mingled with cooked meat and forest fire. Ranger didn't bother with the locksmith tool. He put his foot to the door and crashed it open. Smullen's girlfriend had moved fast. The apartment looked completely cleaned out with the exception of a large upholstered couch, probably too awkward to get down the stairs on short notice. Either end of the couch was intact. The middle of the couch was charred, and the two bodies sitting on the couch were charred. The wall behind the couch was burned black.
This is just like the warehouse, I said. Someone's doused this apartment with gasoline. There's probably a bomb in here somewhere.
Ranger grabbed me and shoved me out of the apartment.
Go to the second floor and get everyone out of the building.
I flew down the stairs and started banging on doors. I had two apartments empty and was on the third when Uncle Mickey hustled down the stairs with Ranger behind him.
Go to the first floor, Ranger said to me. I'll finish up here.
We had everyone on the street and sirens were wailing in the distance when flames shot out of the windows to 3A. The fire raced through the structure, and Ranger and I ran to the neighboring building and made sure everyone evacuated. The police cars were the first on the scene, and then the fire trucks and paramedics. I was relieved to give the disaster over to the professionals and fade away into the crowd of bystanders. I was sweating from horror and exertion in the heat of the fire, and I was shivering with nervous energy. Ranger pulled me into a shadow and wrapped his arms around me. I held tight to his open jacket and tucked my face into him, trying to get my teeth to stop chattering. Ranger wasn't trembling, and he wasn't sweating. His breathing was measured and normal.
Breathe, Ranger said, his voice soft against my ear. Try to breathe deeper.
His calm washed into me, and the shivering and chattering stopped, and tears rolled down my cheeks and soaked into his shirt.
I feel like an idiot, I said to him.
It's just a letdown from the adrenaline rush.
Why aren't you letting down?
My body is more efficient at producing and using adrenaline.
We stood like that, locked together, for a couple more minutes until I stopped crying. Finally, Ranger looked down at me.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
I want to talk to Tank, Ranger said. Stay with me.
I'm pooped. I thought I'd go sit in one of the cars.
Ranger took my hand.
Not yet. I don't want you out of my sight.
Afraid I'll burn down another building?
Afraid you'll get arrested.
Five men in Rangeman Black stood shoulder to shoulder in front of us. Tank and Hal were among them. Ranger dismissed all but Tank.
Hal got to the back of the building just as the car was leaving, Tank said. Hal saw a rope hanging from a third floor window. Looked like someone might have rappelled out. Hal had to turn around to follow the car, and we were both too far behind to catch him. He was really moving.
Did Hal get a plate?
He got a plate the first time he followed him. We've already traced it.
Stolen? Ranger asked.
Yes.
I'm taking Stephanie home. Stay here a while longer and let me know if anything weird goes down.
Ranger opened his apartment door for me and walked me to the kitchen.
Are you hungry?
He asked.
Famished,
and tired.
I can call Ella. She'll make whatever you want. Or you can prowl through the kitchen. There's still peanut butter from the last time you were here.
Peanut butter sounds perfect.
I shucked my coat and assembled a peanut butter and olive sandwich while Ranger leaned against the kitchen counter and punched a number into his phone.
Who are you calling? I asked.
Morelli, do you want him on speakerphone?
No, I haven't the energy.
We need to talk, Ranger said to Morelli. There was a second fire tonight. Two men toasted by a flamethrower. I saw them just before the building exploded. Same drill as the warehouse. Both times there were victims already burned, accelerant in the area, and there must have been an incendiary device on a timer. I'd like to see the reports, and it would be good to get a fast ID on the men in the apartment building tonight.
Morelli said something, and Ranger looked over at me.
No, she wasn't directly involved, Ranger said. She was with me the whole time. She's fine. Her hair didn't even catch fire.
I rolled my eyes and gave Morelli and Ranger the finger.
I wanted to bring this to you first, Ranger said. If you're unavailable, I can go to your captain. This probably could benefit from a task force.
Ranger flipped his phone closed and uncorked a bottle of red wine. He poured me a glass and ate an olive from the bottle. Is Morelli gonna run with this? I asked.
He's going to make a phone call.
I had a sandwich made, but I was so exhausted I could hardly chew. I washed a chunk down with wine and felt all my bones dissolve.
I'm going downstairs to research flamethrowers, Ranger said. I'll be up later.
I finished the sandwich and wine and fell asleep wearing one of Ranger's t-shirts. It was big and comfy, and it was the first thing I laid hands on in the dressing room. Sleep is very strange stuff. One minute you don't know anything, and then you're awake and life starts over. I opened my eyes to Ranger, fully dressed, standing over me, coffee cup in his hand.
I let you sleep as long as possible, he said. We have a meeting at the station in a half hour. You have 10 minutes to shower and get dressed. I'm putting your coffee in the bathroom.
Meeting?
Fire Marshal, that would be Ken Royker, Morelli, Captain Targa, Marty Gobel. Don't know who else. We're going to give information, then we're going to get information.
He looked down at me.
If I leave, you'll get up, right?
Yeah.
You won't go back to sleep?
No.
I don't believe you. You have that go back to sleep look.
He ripped the covers off and dragged me into the bathroom. He turned the shower on and shoved me in, still wearing his t-shirt.
You are such an asshole, I yelled at him.
10 minutes, he said,
and he left the bathroom, closing the door behind him. I was at the sink, wearing his robe with a hairdryer in my hand when he rapped on the door.
10 minutes are up.
Bite me, I said.
I've got clothes for you.
I stuck my head out. You picked out my clothes?
It wasn't hard. They're all the same.
I took the clothes, closed the door, and got dressed. Only the bra didn't have Range Man embroidered on it. I gave up on the hair drying and skipped makeup. I take care of that in the car. Ranger was waiting in the kitchen. He had coffee in a travel mug and a bagel with cream cheese in a styrofoam box. Ranger hated being late for a meeting. Only death or dismemberment or the opportunity for morning sex were considered acceptable reasons for Ranger to be late to a meeting. I took the coffee and bagel and trotted after Ranger out of the apartment and into the elevator. Do we know any more about last night? I asked.
Tank saw Joyce at the fire scene, and it sounded like she had Smullen's girlfriend with her. Other than that, no.
We got into the turbo, and Ranger drove out of the garage. I had my coffee in the turbo's cup holder, the bagel in one hand and a mascara wand in the other.
Don't jerk around, I said to Ranger. I could go blind doing this.
Wouldn't it be safer to do without?
Yeah, but I hide behind it. I put it on when I need to feel brave.
You don't need to feel brave today. Nothing bad is going to happen at this meeting.
I've been sleeping in your bed, and I've got your name embroidered on my underpants, and now I'm going into a meeting where your airspace is going to intersect with Morelli's.
Babe, nothing's been happening in my bed, and no one's going to see your underpants in this meeting unless you go goofy.
We parked in the public lot and crossed the street to the municipal building. Ranger had meeting instructions, so we ignored the cop in a cage and went directly to a conference room. There were 6 men already seated. Ranger and I took our seats, and that left one chair empty. Morelli. Morelli's chair was directly opposite mine. Ranger was to my right. Already I was sweating the seating arrangement.
The conference room door opened and Morelli entered.
He nodded to everyone and claimed his place at the table. He looked across at me and smiled. The smile was small and intimate, and his brown eyes softened just a little, for just a moment. He was in jeans and a cream sweater with the sleeves pushed to his elbows. His hair was curling around his ears and down his neck, and fell in a silky wave across his forehead. The long hair softened his face and gave him a younger look. The jeans were sexy as hell. I had no idea what was going on inside Morelli or Ranger. They looked perfectly at ease and in control. Both of them were good at hiding emotion. Both were good at compartmentalizing. I wasn't good at any of that stuff. I was a wreck inside.
"Sorry I'm late," Morelli said. "I had to wait for the babysitter."
Everyone knew Morelli had someone locked down.
"You called this," Targus said to Morelli. "You want to run it?" "Stephanie and Ranger have information they want to share with us," Morelli said. "And they're hoping we have information to share with them."
His eyes went first to me and then to Ranger. The eyes didn't say anything. Morelli was in cop mode.
"For reasons that are obvious, Stephanie and I have been looking for Dicky Orr," Ranger said. "Stephanie was looking for him in the warehouse when the fire started, and we were in the apartment building last night when that fire occurred. We know that all three fire victims were dead before the fire. We know there was an accelerant in the apartment. I called 911 and did a fast search, but I didn't find anything that looked like a bomb. And for that matter, in both instances, there was no explosion of any significance."
"You saw the victims before the fire?" Targa asked.
"Stephanie saw Smullen. We both saw the two men in the apartment building. All three had been burned beyond recognition. The scorch trail suggested flamethrower."
"The accelerant was gasoline," Royker said. "We found the cans."
"Do you know how it was ignited?" Ranger asked.
"Both times it started in a kitchen. In the case of the warehouse, it was a corner set aside for a cooler and a microwave and a toaster. The lab guys are still working, but it looks like someone rammed something that would burn into the toaster. Hell, it could have been one of those breakfast tart things. The pop-up mechanism was disabled, and the toaster was wired with an interior timer. We suspect the toaster was fitted with a fuse to make sure the flames reached the accelerant, but there was no evidence of it."
"The flaming toaster bomb," Marty Goebel said. "We see a lot of them."
Morelli cracked a smile, and Ranger nudged my knee with his.
"Have you identified the victims from the apartment fire?" Ranger asked.
"Working on it. Not a lot left of them. The explosion was set closer, and the fire burned hotter."
"We saw Rufus Gain enter the building, and we believe he was meeting Victor Gorvich," Ranger said. "Tank was watching, and he didn't see either man come out the front of the building. Someone rappelled out a back window."
Ranger didn't share information on the drug connection or the missing $40 million, and no one mentioned Dicky Orr.
5 minutes before the meeting closed, Morelli's phone buzzed, and he went outside to take the call and never returned. At 11 o'clock, Ranger and I left the building and buckled ourselves into the Porsche. "Do you think he was pulling our leg on the toaster?" I asked Ranger.
"No, he's not that clever. I did a fast run through the apartment looking for an incendiary and didn't see anything. Smullen's girlfriend had taken everything except the couch and the toaster. I saw the toaster and didn't give it a second look."
"Next time we enter a building soaked in gasoline, we'll think to unplug the toaster."
"It looks like Joyce got her Mercedes running."
I turned and looked out the back window. Joyce was a car length behind us.
"I have to give her credit," I said. "She's good."
"She's too good," Ranger said. "She's picking us up on the road."
He keyed himself into the underground garage and parked in his space in front of the elevator.
"Do you have plans for today?" he asked me. "I can give you paperwork if you haven't anything better to do."
"I have two skips I'm working on. I thought I'd check on them."
"If you're going to leave your bag anywhere, please take the monitor with you. Put it in your pocket."
"Is it okay if I only take one?"
"How many do you have?"
"Three."
Ranger sat there for a beat.
"I only planted one."
"Shit."
We rode the elevator to Ranger's apartment, went inside, and I emptied my bag on the kitchen counter. Ranger picked a pen out of the mess.
"This is mine."
I took it from him and put it into my pocket. "The lipstick is another one," I said, handing him the lipstick.
"I'm guessing this is from Joyce," Ranger said. "You can buy these in the spy store."
"And the third?"
I gave him what looked like a menthol cough drop in a paper wrapper.
"This is good," Ranger said, examining the cough drop. "Super small, well disguised. How did you discover it?"
"I tried to eat it."
"That's the flaw. You can write with my pen."
"This is so creepy." Three people planted a transmitter on me, and I never knew they were doing it. What else am I missing? We know one of the transmitters belonged to you, and you planted it on me to protect me. We suspect the second belongs to Joyce, and she wanted me to lead her to Dickie. So what does this third one represent?
Could be as simple as one more person with the same agenda as Joyce. One of the partners who thought you might lead them to Dickie and the money. Maybe someone was casting a wide net. Maybe Joyce is walking around with a transmitter in her bag, too.
You don't want me to freak over this.
I don't want you to get bogged down in negative emotion. And the truth is, we aren't sure what these toys do. I'm going to take them downstairs and give them to one of my tech guys.
Oh my God, I just had a thought. I killed Rufus Kane. If the cough drop is a transmitter, the owner would have known we visited Rufus. He would have known we were at the club, and he would have known we followed Rufus to the apartment.
You didn't kill Rufus, and even if you did, it wouldn't be much of a loss.
Death by flamethrower is gruesome.
That's the appeal. The threat is demoralizing. It instills fear, and fear can be a controlling, paralyzing emotion. There are paramilitary groups who make good use of flamethrowers. It's not an especially effective way to kill a man, but it sends a message.
You think someone is sending a message here?
No. I think this killer is a freak. He has a reason for killing these people, but he's also getting off on the experience. He torches them, and then he sets a fire to hide his thrill kill. Problem is, both times you screwed things up. You saw the torched bodies before the fire. His secret is out.
He might not know that.
If he's the owner of the cough drop, he knows.
What about not wanting to scare me?
You asked, Ranger said. Are you scared?
Big time.
You're safe here.
Yes, but I can't stay here forever. In fact, I can't stay here tonight. I think my free pass has expired.
I don't want to force you to leave and put you in harm's way, Ranger said. But I have limits.
You need a larger apartment, I told him. You need a guest room.
I don't know why I put up with you, Ranger said. You're a real pain in the ass.
You put up with me because I'm amusing and you love me and I pose no threat to your lifestyle because I'm involved with Morelli.
That's all true, Ranger said, but it doesn't make you any less of a pain in the ass.
I shoved my stuff back into my bag. I'm heading out. I need to check on Rex and then I'm going to the office.
I need to stay here, but I can give you one of my men.
Not necessary. I'm okay.
I thought you were scared.
It's a way of life.
What the heck is this? Lula asked when I walked into the office. You're all in Range Man black. Are you working for Range Man again?
I ran out of clean clothes and this was available. I'm going to try to talk to Coughlin again. Want to ride along?
Sure. Maybe we could stop at the video store. Tank's coming over tonight and I'm going to rent a movie. I need something to put him in the mood. I was thinking one of them Lethal Weapon movies, or maybe Transporter.
What kind of mood were you aiming for?
Man mood. In all my years of being a hoe, I learned blood is better than sex if you want to get a man stirred up for action. You let a man watch someone getting his face mashed in and you got a horny guy. It's a beast thing.
Something to keep in mind if I ever want to do it with a beast. We have all the Lethal Weapons movies at Morelli's house. You can borrow them if you want.
You sure he won't mind?
He isn't home. He's locked down with a witness. And even if he was home, he wouldn't mind.
That'd be great, since I was going to have to kite a check to get movie money.
Chapter 13
Morelli's house is officially outside the burg, but not by much. It was a 5-minute drive from the bonds office. I parked the Cayenne and fished Morelli's house key out of my bag. I'll be right out, I said to Lula. Stay here. Morelli lives in a narrow 2-story house configured a lot like my parents. Rooms are shotgunned, with living room going to dining room going to kitchen. Front door, back door, downstairs powder room. Small, barren backyard leading to an alley. 3 small bedrooms, an old-fashioned bath upstairs. He inherited the house from his Aunt Rose, and little by little has been making it his own. I unlocked the front door and stepped into the short hallway that serves as foyer and also leads to the upstairs. I'd expected the house would be silent and empty, but the television was on in the living room.
My first reaction was confusion, fast followed by a rush of embarrassment.
Someone was living here in Morelli's absence. Maybe an out-of-town relative or a down-on-his-luck cop, and I'd barged in unannounced. I was about to quietly sneak out when Dickie Orr walked in from the kitchen. He was eating ice cream out of the tub. His hair was a mess, as if he just rolled out of bed, and he was in his underwear. A white undershirt with a chocolate ice cream stain dribbling down the front and baggy striped boxers. Time stood still. The earth stopped rotating. My heart stuttered in my chest.
Whoa,
I said.
Whoa.
Dickie rolled his eyes and shoved his spoon into the ice cream.
Joe, he yelled. You've got company.
I could hear Morelli's sneakered feet on the stairs, and then he was in the room.
Oh, shit, Morelli said when he saw me.
I gave him a little finger wave.
Hi.
I was feeling awkward, embarrassed that I stumbled into this, and angry that it had been kept from me.
I can explain, Morelli said.
Uh-huh.
Good luck on that one,
Dickie said.
There's no explaining to her. You make one slip up and that's it. Sayonara.
Shut up, Dick Breath, I said. And anyway, it wasn't one slip up. In the 15 minutes we were married, you screwed half the women in Trenton.
I have a high libido, Dickie said to Morelli.
It had nothing to do with your libido. It had to do with the fact that you're a pathological liar and a worm.
You have control issues, Dickie
said.
Men aren't designed for monogamy, and you can't handle that.
I narrowed my eyes at Morelli.
Hit him.
I can't hit him, Morelli said. He's in my protective custody.
And you,
I said to Morelli.
I had no choice, Morelli said. He had to get squirreled away somewhere, and I had the house, so he got dropped in my lap.
You could have told me.
I couldn't tell you. You would have acted differently.
I thought I was going to jail for murder.
I told you not to worry,
Morelli said.
How was I supposed to know that actually meant something? People say that all the time.
What about me? Morelli said. Where's the sympathy for me? I've been trapped in my house with this idiot.
Boy, that hurts, Dickie said. I thought we were bonding.
What about the shooting at your house the night you disappeared? I asked Dickie. And what about the blood on your floor? Morelli was hands in pockets, rocked back on his heels.
Dickie shot one of the hired help in the knee, and then he ran like hell out his back door, right, Dickie?
I ran like the wind.
And why is Dickie here in protective custody?
They wanted him on ice while they investigated the law firm's client list. The original thought was we needed him to testify against his partners, but his partners have disappeared in one way or another. One is confirmed dead and another presumed dead, and the third dropped off the face of the earth when Dickie went missing.
You can't find Pediak?
Vanished. We know he's still around because from time to time one of his goon squads surfaces.
So I'm off the hook.
Yep,
Morelli said.
What about Gorvitch? I thought I was a suspect there.
I wanted you to dredge up an alibi in case the press came to you.
His attention fixed on my rangeman jacket.
What are you doing in rangeman clothes? You were head to toe rangeman this morning.
I ran out of clean clothes and these were available.
Available? Where were they available?
In Ranger's closet.
Are you fucking kidding me? I'm holed up here with a witness from hell and you're moved in with Ranger?
You told him to take care of me.
Not that way.
There's no that way going on. It's no different from what you've got here. You've got Dickhead in protective custody. Does that mean you're sleeping with him?
The color was rising in Morelli's face.
I'll kill him.
You will not kill him. Read my lips. Nothing has happened between us.
At least not the main event. I chose to believe the prelims didn't count in this case.
And I'm not moved in with him. I'm going home and I'm going to get on with my life now that I know I'm not a murder suspect.
Maybe you should move in here,
Morelli said.
There's a lunatic out there with a flamethrower and you're mixed up in it somehow.
No thanks. I already did time with Dickie. I'll take my chances with a flamethrower.
I went to the television and looked through the DVD stacked alongside. I just stopped around to borrow the Lethal Weapon collection. I found the boxed set and looked over at Morelli. You don't mind?
What's mine is yours,
Morelli said. I let myself out and jogged to the Porsche.
I thought you decided to take a nap in there, Lula said.
I handed the DVDs over to her and pulled out.
Hey, it took a while to find them.
In a half hour, we were in front of Coughlin's house. I paged through his file, found his phone number, and called him.
I'm in front of your house, I said. I want to talk to you, and I don't want to end up with squirrel guts in my hair. Can we call a truce for 10 minutes?
Yeah, I guess that would be okay,
Coughlin said.
If you promise you won't try to take me in now.
Promise.
Lula followed me to the door.
He better not go back on his word. I don't want to smell like rodent when Tank comes over tonight.
I opened the door and took a step back.
Is it okay to come in?
I yelled into the house. Coughlin appeared in the hall.
I disconnected the booby trap. It's safe to come in.
Someday you're going to hurt someone with those beaver bombs, Lula said.
I only use stuffing that's soft, Coughlin said.
Yeah, but what about them button eyes? Suppose you got hit with one of them eyes. That would leave a bruise.
Coughlin had an apron on.
I'm kind of busy, he said. What did you want?
Are you stuffing up some roadkill? Lula asked.
No, I'm making a meatloaf for supper.
I wanted to talk to you about your court appearance, I said to Coughlin. When you didn't show up, you became a felon, and the original charge didn't look that bad. Destruction of property? The details aren't on the bond application. What sort of property did you destroy?
I went nuts and exploded an opossum in a cable company truck.
Uh-oh, Lula said. The cable police would get you for that one.
Coughlin turned white.
Oh my God, there are cable police?
She's kidding, I told him. You're kidding, right? I said to Lula.
Probably, Lula said.
It all started when the city put in new water pipes, Coughlin said. They cut through my cable line when they dug a trench through my front yard to lay the new pipe. So I called the cable company and left my name, but they never called me back.
Those fuckers, Lula said. They never call anyone back.
I called them and left my name every day for 3 weeks, and no one ever called me back. Then after 3 weeks, someone actually answered a phone at the cable company. A real person.
Get out, Lula said. They don't have real people working there. Everyone knows that.
No, I swear it's true. Someone answered the phone. So after they had me on hold for an hour, I explained the problem, and they said they would send someone out in 2 weeks, and they gave me the day. So I stayed home all that day, and the next day, and the next day. And on the third day, someone came to fix my cable problem, except they were told it was inside, and it was outside, so they couldn't fix it. It's not like I just don't have television, you know. I sell my animals on the internet, and I didn't have any internet connection all this time, so I gave the guy $20, and he ran a line from the junction box across the street to my house. Only, it's like a plastic cable kind of thing, so right away with all the cars rolling over it, the cable started breaking. So I wrapped it in electrician's tape, and I do that twice a day to hold the cable together.
How long you been doing this? Lula asked.
3 months. I keep calling them back and telling them, and they keep saying they're going to send the first available crew out to me, but I have to be home or I'll get put at the end of the line. So that's why I can't go downtown with you. I never leave for more than 5 minutes unless it's real late at night. Even when it looks like my car is gone and I'm not in the house, I'm watching from somewhere. I can't take a chance on missing the cable repairman.
And the opossum in the truck?
The cable repairman stopped at my neighbor's house 3 weeks ago and swapped out his broken box, and I went postal and threw a performance piece through the driver's side window.
And you think they're still going to give you cable service after you bomb their truck?
They send me a bill every month and I always pay on time. I figure that means something. And twice I got an automated message that said a crew was scheduled, but they never showed up.
Well, I can understand why you can't go to the police station and get rebonded, Lula said. There's extenuating circumstances.
They might never show up, I told Coughlin.
My friend Marty lives on the next block, and he had the exact same thing happen, and they showed up one day and fixed his cable.
How long did he wait?
It was almost 5 months.
And he stayed home for 5 months? I asked Coughlin.
Yes, you have to. It's the rule. He lost his job, but he got his cable fixed.
I hate those fuckers, Lula said.
So as soon as your cable guy shows up and fixes your cable, you'll call me?
Yes.
Lula and I walked back to the Cayenne and stopped to look at the cable running across the road. It was thick with electrician's tape, and in places had been wrapped in foam and then overwrapped with the tape. So what's going on with you and Tank? I asked Lula. Is it serious?
Yeah, but only for about 12 minutes at a time.
12 minutes is good.
We've been working up to it. And then if you add all the 12 minutes together, you get a whole hour. You want an hour with Morelli, you just get him watching one of them Lethal Weapons movies.
I wasn't sure I wanted an hour. My egg timer was set on 22 minutes, 18 if Morelli was on his game. An hour sounded like a lot of work. And if it was divided up into 5 12-minute sessions, I suspected I'd need mechanical devices. Although there was no doubt in my mind Morelli could manage it. I drove Lula back to the office and dropped her at her car.
Looks like Joyce is parked across the street, Lula said, and she's got Smullen's girlfriend with her.
I waved at them. Hi, I said.
Fuck you, Joyce yelled.
She's in a mood, Lula said.
most likely because it was a lot harder to pick up my trail now that I wasn't broadcasting. Have fun tonight, I said to Lula. See you tomorrow. I drove to my apartment with Joyce tagging along. No threat there. I wasn't going to lead her to anything. It was late afternoon, and I was going to have a peaceful evening at home. I'd call Ranger and tell him I was home with Rex and everything was right with my world. Then I'd shove something frozen into the microwave, crack open a beer, and watch television. And Joyce could sit in my lot until her ass fell asleep. The $40 million was out there somewhere, but I didn't care anymore. Joyce's problem, not mine. I was off the hook. I wasn't wanted for murder.
Hooray!
I parked, ran upstairs, and waltzed into my apartment. Nice and quiet. Not as luxurious as Ranger's apartment, but it was mine, and it felt like home. I gave Rex fresh water and dropped a small chunk of cheese into his cage. Something banged against my front door. I went to the peephole to look out, but before I reached the door, there was a wrenching noise and another loud thud, and the door flew open and crashed against the wall. It was the big, bleach-blonde, muscle-bound moron with the stapled balls. He rushed inside and grabbed me. I shrieked, and he clapped a hand to my mouth.
Shut up, he said, or I'll hit you. I'd like to do that anyway, except my boss wants you in one piece.
Why?
I don't know. That's just his way.
No, I mean, why does he want me?
My boss doesn't like people who get too nosy, and you've got a knack for being in places you don't belong. My boss thinks you know something.
Who, me? No way, I don't know anything. You could fill a room with what I don't know.
You can tell it to my boss. He wants to talk to you. You can cooperate and walk out with me, or I can stun gun you and carry you out. Which is it?
One more stun gun, and I was going to permanently forget half the alphabet. I'll walk out. He turned, and Joyce was standing there with a gun in her hand.
No way, Jose, Joyce said. I'm following her. I saw her first. You want the money? Find it yourself. Fuck off. And my name isn't Jose. It's Dave.
I'm counting to three, Dave. If you aren't hauling ass by three, I'm going to shoot you in the nuts.
What is it with my nuts? Why is everybody picking on my nuts?
One, Joyce said.
You're getting on my nerves.
Two.
Screw this, Dave said.
He grabbed the barrel of the gun discharged, and Joyce shot off the top of his pinky finger. Dead silence. We were all surprised. Dave looked at his shortened pinky. His eyes rolled back in his head, and he crashed face first to the floor. Shit, Joyce, I said to her. There's blood all over the hall, and Dylan just did the floors. Joyce put her boot to him and rolled him onto his back.
Was his nose always flat like that?
No. And he didn't used to have blood coming out of it either. He broke it when he fell on his face. Joyce took his hand and shoved it into his pants so he wouldn't get any more blood on the floor.
What do you want to do with him? We could call 911, or we can put him in the elevator and push the button.
Was he alone?
No, he has a partner waiting in a black BMW.
We'll turn him over to the partner. We dragged him to the elevator and rode him down to the ground level. We dragged him out of the elevator to the parking lot, and Joyce whistled through her teeth to get the partner's attention. The BMW drove up, and the partner got out and squinted down at Dave. Dave still had his hand rammed into his pants, and his crotch had a big blood stain.
Jesus, lady, Dave's partner said. God damn!
It's not as bad as it looks. Joyce wanted to shoot him in the nuts, but the gun discharged prematurely. Probably that happens a lot with you guys, right?
What?
Anyway, she just shot his pinky finger off. We put his hand in his pants so he wouldn't bleed on the carpet.
Man, that's cold.
Do you need help getting him into the car? Dave's partner reached inside and popped the trunk. He's not dead, I said to the partner.
This is a new BMW with real leather seats. I don't want him bleeding all over everything. He'll be fine in the trunk.
Joyce had her gun drawn, presumably protecting her investment, which was me.
Go figure. Saved by Joyce Barnhart.
Don't try anything stupid, Joyce said to Dave's partner. It was disappointing to have to settle for a pinky finger. I wouldn't mind getting a second chance to shoot someone's nuts off.
I grabbed Dave's leg and helped wrangle him into the trunk. We closed the lid, and the BMW sped out of the lot.
So what's the deal for the rest of the day? Joyce said. Are you staying here?
That was the original plan, but I had a feeling Dave might come back after he got his nose straightened and his finger stitched up. I'm going to spend the night at Range Man, I told Joyce.
Give him a tug for me, Joyce said,
and she walked to her car and took off.
I ran upstairs, hung my bag on my shoulder, and wrapped my arms around Rex's aquarium. I carted Rex out to the Porsche and then ran down to the basement and told Dylan about the door and the carpet. Dylan didn't look all that surprised. It wasn't the first time he'd had to fix my door.
Chapter 14. At 7 o'clock, I heard the keys get tossed onto the silver tray in the hall, and seconds later, Ranger walked into the kitchen.
I thought you were staying in your apartment tonight, Ranger said.
Change of plans.
He glanced at Rex on the kitchen counter.
This looks serious.
Remember the guy who got his boys stapled? He came visiting. He wanted me to go for a ride with him, but I declined.
Ranger took 2 wine glasses out of the cabinet and uncorked a bottle of red. He poured 2 glasses and gave 1 to me.
What did it take to discourage him?
Joyce Barnhart with a gun. She tailed me to my apartment and saw Dave follow me into the building. That's a guy's name, Dave. She came up to check things out and decided Dave was a threat to her future earnings. So she shot the top of his pinky finger clear off his hand. Then Dave's partner came and loaded him into the trunk of their Beamer and drove him away. That's a short version.
Go figure, Ranger said.
Exactly. We both sipped some wine. That's not even the best part of the day, I said to Ranger. I stopped at Morelli's house to get a DVD for Lula, and I walked in on Dickie.
Dickie Orr?
Yep. It wasn't Dickie's blood in his house. The goon squad was sent to roust him, and he shot one of them in the knee and ran like the wind. Morelli has him in protective custody. He's locked away so he can live to testify against his partners, but his partners are disappearing. Smullen is confirmed dead. The police are presuming Gorvitch is dead, and they can't find Pediak. The doorbell buzzed, and Ranger opened the door to Ella and dinner. He took the tray from her at the door and carried it into the kitchen.
Have you eaten? He asked.
A peanut butter sandwich at 5.
Ella had sent grilled vegetables, pork tenderloin, and saffron rice for 2.
Ella knew I was here?
Everyone knows you're here. There aren't a lot of secrets in this building. Only the private apartments and the lavatories aren't monitored.
Do they know anything about our relationship?
No. And they won't ask.
Not even Tank?
Not even Tank.
So they think we're sleeping together?
Probably.
Ranger set 2 place settings at the breakfast bar.
Did Morelli or Dickie say anything about the money?
No. Morelli said the police were investigating the law firm's client list, but he didn't say more than that. It wasn't a long visit. Lula was outside waiting in the car. We both dug into the food.
Did Dave say anything interesting?
He said I was nosy, that I had a knack for being in places I didn't belong, and his boss didn't like it.
So they were going to do what to you?
Dave didn't say, but I don't think it was anything good.
I cleaned my plate and looked over at the tray. No dessert. Ranger never ate dessert. Another reason I couldn't marry Ranger. That and the fact that he didn't see marriage as an option for him.
We loaded the dishwasher, put the leftover food in the fridge, and migrated into the den to watch television.
Do you watch television a lot? I asked him.
Almost never.
He remoted his way through the guide.
No games on tonight, only boxing.
I thought about Lula's theory on bringing out the beast in a man. So far, Ranger had the beast under control. Best not to disturb that balance. No boxing, I said.
Okay, let's roll through the movies. The Terminator, Pulp Fiction, Braveheart, The Transporter, Deliverance. Any of those turn you on?
Where was Terms of Endearment when you needed it?
They're all sort of violent, I said.
And?
There must be other movies.
Ranger clicked through more of the guide.
Bruce Lee?
Keep going.
I'm not watching Jane Eyre.
Okay, great, go with Bruce Lee.
Maybe you'll learn something, Ranger said.
Just don't get any ideas.
About what?
About anything.
10 minutes into Bruce Lee, I sucked in some air.
Uh-oh, I said.
The uh-oh had been an inadvertent exclamation. Nature had struck at an inopportune time, placing me in an awkward position. Ranger looked over at me.
What?
Nothing.
At least nothing I want to share with Ranger.
It's something. What is it?
Cramps.
Babe.
I need, you know. I said to him.
You don't have anything with you?
I was planning on staying in my apartment.
And then I left in a hurry, and I forgot until just now.
Do you want me to send one of my men out for something?
Would they do that?
I'd have to pay him extra.
Maybe Ella can help me. I ran downstairs to see Ella, and 10 minutes later I was back on the couch.
Everything okay? Ranger asked.
Yes, Ella had some.
Bruce Lee was kicking ass on the screen, and God knows what this was doing to Ranger's libido, but I now realized nature had come through for me. What had at first seemed like an embarrassing disaster was, in actuality, a blessing. This was my lucky week. First Joyce, and now nature.
Ranger slid an arm around me and nuzzled my neck. Bruce Lee was getting to him. Lula has a theory that violent movies put a man in the mood, I said to Ranger.
Everything puts a man in the mood, Ranger said.
Good thing I got cramps, eh? I'm safe.
Not for me, Ranger said.
Eek. Guess again, I told him. Ranger changed channels to Jane Eyre.
The two toys we found in your bag were simple transmitters. With the exception of my device, you're supposed to be clean. How did Joyce find you this afternoon?
She picked me up at the Bond's office. I opened my eyes and looked at the clock. Almost 8 a.m. No Ranger. I checked under the covers. I was still wearing all the clothes I'd started with when I went to bed. Another night of successfully dodging the bullet. I scrambled out of bed and into the shower. I'd had a brilliant idea halfway through Jane Eyre. I knew how I was going to get Coughlin to court to re-register. I'd have Grandma babysit his house. I got dressed in more Range Man black and went to the kitchen to forage for breakfast. I called Ranger with a fast message while I finished my coffee. I'm heading out, I said. I'm going to get Grandma and take her to Coughlin's house. I've got the pen transmitter with me. See you later. Morelli was up next. What's new? I said.
Unfortunately, nothing. What's new with you?
I told him about Dave and Joyce. So I'm back at Range Man, I said.
I'm going to try to put a positive spin on this, Morelli said. At least I know you're safe.
This morning I'm doing bounty hunter stuff, I said. I'm going to get Grandma to help me.
So much for safe.
Connie was last on the list. If I can get Coughlin to the courthouse, can you get him rebonded right away? I asked her. I can catch people, but I can't write bond. Only Connie and Vinny can do that.
As long as the judge will grant bond. Lula is here. She can answer the phones. How are you going to get Coughlin to the courthouse? I thought he was beaver bombing.